The title of tonight's talk is Problems with Preferences. My early practice was to the tune of the phrase, no preference. I heard that a lot in my first 5 years. It's a very predominant idea in Zen and Tibetan Buddhism. It's related to the seeds of suffering. And preference by itself may seem like just the way we get through life, but there's an illustrative story from Ajahn Sumedho, which I will pass along to you. When he was a monk in Thailand, apparently he was getting to be a fairly senior monk at that point because he got stuck with the Westerners, he being a Westerner himself. So the Western monks and the Western practitioners and visitors who came to the monastery pestered him. And he discovered that he preferred peace over the chaos of Western monks and practitioners. So he escaped the monastery and took himself to the coast, where he found an area with just some perfect little huts right on the beach. And there was one that even had a little back room where he could go and he wouldn't hear anything, he wouldn't see anything. He'd be very much at peace. But then someone took him up on the hill where he could look out over the ocean. And he thought, oh, this is so peaceful. I'll stay here for a while. Then someone came and said, what you really ought to do is go out on an island, because that is even more peaceful. And it just kept getting better and better. And then he got an infection in his foot, and it became very serious, and he had to be removed to a hospital in Bangkok. And at that point, he took that opportunity to examine the trouble that he had been taking to find peaceful conditions. Even for peace, this trouble was too much. And he decided that he would practice having no preferences. And he says, I find through this practice, my mind is calm and peaceful, rather than just the conditions in which he was living. The conditions are always changing. Whatever is going on, whatever cute little hut we found to meditate in, things are going to change. And even, he says, what is pleasant can become unpleasant. For example, another story that I've heard of a monk with the perfect little hut in Thailand was that it became completely surrounded by a very large anaconda. So it stopped being quite so pleasant. So what Ajahn Sumedho discovered was that he could make the mind peaceful by not preferring one thing over another. He says we should just keep this awareness of impermanence and be at peace with the way things are, not demanding that they be otherwise. So this story shows how what looks like a very innocent, and it at first glance it looked like a wholesome preference, can morph into craving and aversion and cause suffering. Even before that morphing happens, preferences can cause trouble. I was waiting for an airplane departure, sitting in the waiting room very calmly, and I saw that other people were beginning to line up. And I wondered what was motivating them to do that. And I thought, well, should I do that? Is there something here that I should be wanting? And I thought about it, you know, what are my preferences in this situation? And I thought, well, I could get a good seat. I could find a convenient way to store my bag. And then I could get off the plane first. And I'd have a nice leisurely connection. And, you know, until I looked for and found a preference for getting into the line, I had no desire for any of those advantages. I didn't even think of them as advantages. But once I had that preference, I felt physically agitated, and I began to see the other people in the waiting area as the competition. And another preference that I have, I prefer chocolate ice cream to every other food that there is. But I know that it's not good for me, you know, except for the rare treat. I follow the wisdom that tells me I should forgo chocolate ice cream for healthier foods. And whenever possible, you know, I will eat healthy food that tastes pleasant. I have that preference. But if I cling to my taste preferences, when I'm in a situation, for example, on retreat, where I don't really have control over what the food is going to be for a particular meal, then clinging to that preference will result in hunger. That's one of the reasons why we don't have control on retreat over what we eat. They provide, most retreats, the posh Western retreats, will provide enough variety in the offering that very few people really have to go to bed hungry. But if we can just accept what's offered, it's a terrific practice in seeing the power of very simple preferences. I remember on one of my first retreats, one of the teachers was talking about sitting in the separate area where the teachers eat and realizing that she wanted a second helping of something. But she saw this desire arise and wasn't going to act on it and worked with it. And almost everybody in the meditation hall was thinking, why? What's wrong with the second helping? And of course, nothing's wrong with the second helping, except that it feeds that desire. And the desire really is the teenage version of the baby preference. And when that teenager grows up, it's a full-blown craving, and it leads to clinging, which we all know is the cause of suffering, or dukkha. It is necessary to have no preferences to establish mindfulness, because the lack of the leaning toward one thing or another, any unease due to wanting or aversion, that's an element of mindfulness. It keeps the mind from being at ease and open. So when we are mindful, we are aware of whatever arises. Not chasing anything, not pushing anything away. And the reason that it's worth a Dharma talk tonight is because this is the only way to study suffering. And through studying suffering, the way to end it. We must be able to explore dukkha, to let go of its causes and conditions. So, studying preferences is the same thing. When I look at what I gave into yesterday afternoon when I went and got that chocolate ice cream, because the weather was perfect for chocolate ice cream, and I had something to celebrate. So I had the opportunity to study that preference, how it felt when it arose, how it felt when I paid attention to it and thought about it, made plans, and talked my wife into going to get the ice cream and being my partner in crime. I got to watch all that and see it grow in power as I fed it with my attention. So that very little tiny first seed we call Vedana. It consists of a feeling in the body that something that has arisen in our awareness is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So it's a physical response. We literally feel it, except when we're totally unaware of it, which is most of the time. The body is still feeling it. The body knows what's going on. And it gets stored in the mind. It gets stored in this, you know, subconscious memory that we have of, I didn't like that. When Vedana is mixed with a story, the I didn't like that, it generates emotion. Now, I'm just using that as a working definition, because of the confusion between feeling, which is the way the Pali word Vedana is usually translated. So there's very often a confusion in English between the word feeling and emotion. So Vedana is just that physical pleasure, displeasure, neutrality. And emotion, for purposes of this discussion, will mean the feeling that has gotten cloaked in a story of, I tried that once and I didn't like it at all, and I'll be darned if I'm going to try it again. That sort of thing. So how we practice with Vedana or with preferences is just by noting this feeling of liking or not liking or neutrality, studying that feeling and just notice that a story wants to come up without getting caught up in that story. There's a phrase in Buddhist circles, staying out of the story. And for the first many years of my teaching, I would say it so often I got sick of hearing it come out of my own mouth. Get out of the story and into the feeling or into the body. And a great opportunity for studying subtle preferences is in meditation. For example, in our session tonight, I suggested that you notice what arose in your awareness and whether you liked it or didn't like it. without saying, oh, that's a car. That's a pretty big car. It's going kind of fast. Why is it so noisy? Story. So just staying out of the story. And if we're going to notice big emotional preferences, the best place to observe those is in our daily life. There, they're easier to feel. You know, that subtle beginning of a preference or vedana, we're just not tuned into it most of the time. But in our real lives, man, it hits us over the head. I'm angry. I don't like that. The problem, though, is, yes, we notice the feeling, but the story is so sticky that it's very, very hard then to get out of the story. So the ideal thing to do is to practice it both ways, in meditation and in daily life. Is everybody following so far? Any questions at this point? Okay, you do look like you're paying attention. But I'm afraid if you're getting topped off there too early. Okay, the ability to see the origin of preferences is really important in deepening practice and becoming free of suffering. It's essential. When we can identify vedana in a receptive, open, accepting awareness, where we can train the mind to hold clinging and aversion at bay. And that way we can keep this naturally arising pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feeling from growing into the causes of suffering. When we can notice the unpleasant without aversion, then we're okay with whatever happens. Then we can be like Ajahn Sumedho, who is now, ironically, a great Western teacher. He got over his preference against working with Westerners, and he's doing it brilliantly. So thus, by working with preferences, just noticing them, staying out of the story, we can break the chains of attachment and progressively achieve equanimity and freedom. This does not result in our becoming indifferent or aloof. That's a common misunderstanding. It's called the near enemy of equanimity. When we're able to hold all of our experience in accepting awareness, we're still going to feel the full range of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. We're just going to have the mental space for wisdom to prevail. So if you want to know how to tell the difference between wise discernment and preferences and clinging, on the other hand, it's that the attachment or clinging captures our attention and it shrinks our awareness. The mind coalesces around that story, which is primarily, you will notice, about me and mine. And there's a mental tightness to it. Wisdom feels spacious, relaxed, with no emotional stickiness to it, leaving the mind free to follow changing events and adapt to them, to be okay with whatever happens. We lose that urge to react, such as getting into the line to board the airplane and the burden of ego is lifted from us. Thank you.